We're back in the building. What's good? Really enjoyed this conversation with Sid. She touches base on a couple just key things that I want to highlight before the episode kicks off. One that, you know, run just to run, have fun. It's not about racing against the clock. It's not about racing against the watch. It's not even about necessarily improving times or distance or whatever. There's just a net benefit to getting out there and getting moving. And number two, it takes more than just shoes to run. This common sort of thought that, you know, it's so easy because you can just, you know, put on a pair of running shoes and go outside and go for a jog. Not a lot of people have that privilege or that blessing or that opportunity. And it takes more than shoes to just run, as you can see with you need apparel and you might need a hat and sometimes you might want some sunglasses. But I digress. Check out the episode. Really good convo. Enjoy. Welcome to the League of Champs, an arena where we invite everyday athletes, coaches, and entrepreneurs to discuss the methodologies they use to affect change and achieve purpose. League of Champs sits at the intersection of mindfulness and sport with one intention: victory. Join us. What up, what up? Happy Monday. We are back. Welcome to League of Champs. I've got Sid on the line live from Montreal, but we know each other from New York. What's up, Sid? How's it going?
Hi, how's it going? It's going well.
Good. Welcome to the league. Nice to have you on. It sort of happened circumstance on how we actually got connected, but I don't particularly do intros or bios. So if you want to just give maybe a quick little this is who I am, and this is what I do, and this is where I'm at for the people that might be interested in who you are.
Oh, yikes. Okay. So I am a Canadian living in New York. So right now I am temporarily displaced in Montreal. I have a day job. I work at a big media company. I manage employee experience and internal events and internal comms and websites and all this kind of stuff. And then I have a bunch of freelance stuff I do on top of that, one of which is what we're going to talk about a lot of today, which is the podcast I made with CL Athletics called Toenails, which is about running and also not about running. And then I also do kind of some other educational-based work outside of my day job as well that's focused on alternative educational platforms and programs for young people to learn mainly creative skills, but it's kind of across the board. Outside of that, I host a lot of events. I moderate a lot of talks. I used to be a freelance photographer. I feel like there's other stuff too. Oh, I have also a side podcast of my own called Research. It's just a space for me to have interesting conversations with people that I think are unique and offer a unique perspective, and it's literally a place for me to research, for me to learn new things.
Dope.
I think that answers the question.
Yeah, that definitely does. That's a lot, man. There's a lot in that toolbox to draw from. You are a Canadian, but like that's a New Yorker's bio right there.
There's a reason I moved to New York.
For real. I do not just do one thing. There's a multitude of things that I do because I enjoy them. Amazing. So you grew up in Montreal then. Where did it all begin?
I didn't actually grow up in Montreal. I'm just here right now because my friend let me stay at her apartment because I need to quarantine for 2 weeks before I go travel elsewhere. But I actually was born in Orangeville, which is a small town outside of Newmarket, which is outside of Toronto, which is probably the only city most Americans know of in Canada. And I was born in Orangeville, which at the time that I was born there, my parents were the only interracial couple in the town, which is terrifying. So we moved to Ajax, which is another small town. It's a bigger town. It's a true suburb, like cookie cutter homes, like the same, you know, chain bars and restaurants that everyone goes to. There is a Costco and a Walmart and, you know, that's it. And then I moved. After I graduated high school, I moved to Australia for 6 months, and then I moved downtown. So I lived in Toronto for about 6 or 7 years before moving to New York in January of 2019.
Cool. Wow. I mean, how was it growing up in Canada with being interracial and not maybe having that diversity around you? Like, how did you sort of find yourself? What were your outlets? Did you have people to sort of connect with on that at all?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. It's interesting that you framed it as not really having the diversity around, when I feel like a lot of the external brand perception of Canada is that it is really diverse, even though I would argue, I would kind of side with you on that, that it's like, it's not really. Like, it's diverse in the true sense of what diverse actually means. Like, in the textbook definition of mixed groups of people, yes, that is what diverse actually means, yeah, right? Yeah. So in that sense, Toronto and Canada mixes quite well. Yeah. In the U.S., I feel like it's a lot more segregated racially and ethnically.
Totally.
But in Ajax, fun fact, I think is actually, and I might have the facts a little bit wrong, but maybe fun somewhat facts, maybe a little bit of misinformation, but Ajax has like the highest per capita amount of Black people in, oh, I think, all of Canada.
Wow.
So yeah, fun fact. Yeah. You know, and that's probably just, I would probably assume, pushing, you know, rent and cost of living increasing and increasing in Toronto, the major city. Yeah. People move out to Scarborough, which is another suburb, and then into Ajax, which is, I guess, the catch-all.
Yeah.
But so my upbringing was, like, my high school, I can't really remember the makeup of my elementary school, but, like, my high school was pretty diverse. Like, from what I can recall, like, in looking at photos, is like, there's all different types of people. And I think being mixed race, even though at the time I didn't have the language to talk about it, you know, I was, you know, when you're in high school, like, you don't understand, or at least I did not understand how to talk about racial dynamics, you, yeah, know, and white, mm-hmm, passing and what that means.
Yeah.
But in high school, I think I was embodying, like, the one foot in, one foot out that being a mixed race person gives you. And really, if you're taking an intersectional look on identity, anyone can have this experience, right? Like, whether you're first generation, like, Canadian and your parents are immigrants, or whether, like, you have a language that your family doesn't have, or whether you've migrated to multiple different places, or whether you, you know, there's so many different ways that your identity is intersectional, right? So,
yeah.
But from my own racial and ethnic background, I think I can remember, like, many moments in high school where I was just like the odd one out, like,
yeah,
in too many things, and not really ever feeling like I was a part of them. You know, like, I was on the track team, and my nickname on the track team was Snowflake because I was the only white girl.
Wow.
And, you know, and then, yeah, like, mixing around and joining, I was on every single extracurricular in high school. And I think that's partially because, like, my home life was like, it was a little tense. So, yeah, doing all the extracurriculars, you realize early on that you don't have to go home.
Yeah.
And then you also don't really have to go to class either. Like, the more teams you're on, the more practices and games that you get to leave class for. So I was on everything. And this probably connects to a future question that you have, but, like,
yep,
I was on the soccer team. I was on the volleyball team. I was on the dragon boat team. I was on track. I was on cross country. I was on rugby. I made the improv troupe. I was in,
wow,
musical theater. I did all the things.
Wow.
You know?
Yeah, I mean,
but I think it's like, it's you join all of those places looking for community, right?
For so, sure. Yeah. Early life hacks, like, for any younger kids listening. you're not in school right now anyway, due to where the world is, but, like, if you want to escape class, join every join every extracurricular that you can to get out of the house. I mean, that is a very unique experience. It sounds like moving into Ajax then presented a bit more diversity, and then, yeah, you sort of you started to flourish, or maybe even find yourself a little bit by joining all of these extracurriculars to find community. What was, out of everything you did, which is massively interesting too, to look at your sort of high school experience and then, you know, draw that thread to now, and how sort of diverse, I would say, your toolbox is and everything that you do. It really reflects of who you were as a younger person. But what were some of your favorite activities? This is a sports podcast, so maybe more leaning towards sports, but, like, just in general, you know, what were some of your favorite extracurriculars? I mean, you were on the track team, rugby, soccer, like, what was the favorite thing?
Well, I grew up, my first sports that like I really took seriously were gymnastics and then trampoline. And I was a competitive trampolinist for many years throughout elementary school and high school, culminating in like my final years of like basically living at a gymnastics gym and training like 12 hours a week and doing that on top of school and all the other sports that I was in. So that was definitely like kind of the first love. Like trampoline as a sport, like most people don't know anything about because they only know like backyard trampolines, which are nowhere near as fun as Olympic trampolines.
The trampoline
is like a routine based sport. You have like a 10 trick routine and your routine is judged on degree of difficulty and then your form. So it's kind of similar to gymnastics in that sense. So I did that for a long time and I would say that was like a love, but the only thing that I would say is remarkable about my athletic experience and career is just how diverse it is. You know, like it's really just like, I'm not particularly amazing at any sports. I am only a remarkable athlete because I can do a lot of them to a medium degree of proficiency. Like that's really it.
Which
you know,
is
like
a talent.
I was never the star athlete. I'm just like very versatile and I have a lot of aggression and it works out well for me in most sports.
Yeah. Cause that translates a lot. And then two for the gymnastics. It's funny you say that. I'm very familiar. My sister was a gymnast, through like mid high school. So like that circuit and just that world I'm very familiar with. I've been in plenty of like gymnastics meets and helping parents like break down beams after gymnastics is a thing.
It's like a
culture and that community is like a whole thing. But I think there's like there's massive learnings that come from being a gymnast in terms of just like strength and your ability and what you learn in terms of fear, because of all the flipping and turning and degree of difficulty within some of those elements. So that's pretty amazing. And then fast forward to like college through that high school experience, what was that transition like? Was it just full on to sort of extracurricular like art stuff, or were you still playing intramural sports at all? Like what was college like?
Yeah. So when I finished high school, I didn't know what I want to do for university. So I moved to Australia for 6 months and then I decided I wanted to study fashion. So I moved to Toronto and I started at Ryerson's fashion communication program, which is like a really small, very competitive, very, very intense program. I think they've softened it up in the past couple of years, but like that program was absolutely mental for the amount of work that we had to do. But Ryerson is University of Toronto is like the big school, you know, that has all the sports teams and whatever. And like Ryerson's a commuter school. So while they do have clubs and stuff, like I wasn't a good enough athlete of any kind to make it onto a varsity team, like a university team. That wasn't going to happen for me.
Yeah.
So the first probably year of university, I just like stopped playing sports altogether. And like occasionally I think I would use the school's gym and just go work out. But like, I don't play sports and I don't work out for like the physical side. I don't care like how my body changes. I think it's interesting, but like, that's not my motivation. So like just going and like pumping fucking barbells like does nothing for me at all. It's so boring. It's so boring. And gyms are insufferable, you know? So I think I fell into like in combination with a lot of family stuff that was happening during that year and just the pressure of living alone for the first time and like not having a lot of money and all that kind of stuff. Fell into like a pretty deep depression, and it wasn't in summer in between first and second year university that I found running and like urban running crews, you know, which were like an organic thing at that time, which is like 2012, 2013. It was before Nike realized that they could capitalize on it and basically, in my opinion, bastardized the running crew movement. But, you know, whatever. I'm sure we'll get into that later. But I found this crew through Instagram, through like a whole, like I was working, kind of funny story, I was working at, there was an art supply store underneath my apartment in Toronto, in Chinatown. It's called Gorsman's. I hope it still exists. I worked there, and it was close enough to my apartment that I could get the Wi-Fi from my apartment. So I sat in the basement of the art supply store and pretended to organize the paint. And I scrolled on Instagram for like hours and hours and hours. Amazing and that's job. How I found Parkdale Runners. I was doing a great job. I hope they never listen to this. I was doing a great job. And I found Parkdale Road Runners, which is running for Toronto. And that is how I started running. And basically, that's how I started my, I guess, like adult pursuing of athletics.
Yeah.
Which is really a completely different world than doing it as a kid. And, like, no one fucking prepares you for that, like, how hard it is. Like,
yep.
You can't really do team sports as an adult. Like, it just no. doesn't really work out that well, yeah, you know? Yeah. Like, it's so hard to organize. So that started, like, a whole new world of exploring sports, like, a lot of more individual sports.
Yeah. So what else outside of running for individual sports as an adult?
Yeah, I was running a lot. Like, I'm just kind of a person, when I start something, I like get so into it, you know? Yeah. And then I ultimately just take things too seriously. I'm bad at having hobbies. So I do a sport for like a year or 2 years, and then I have to like quit it and start something new because it just starts to take over my life. So I did that with running, and I got to the point where I was like skipping class and running 21K, you know, like obviously compensating and just dealing with anxiety and like putting that into running.
Yeah.
But I was training for a marathon in like my third year of university, and I got stress fractures in both my shins, which fucking sucked. And then I shifted into boxing. So I was like, okay, I need to do something, you know, to stay mentally sound. So I'm going to do boxing because that doesn't require your legs, right? Like, silly me, it actually does really, really require your legs.
It's
a lot of legs, a lot of feet, a lot of bouncing, you know, which I didn't really realize. But I took one class that was like a boxer sizing class at Sully's, which is a gym in Toronto, like a kind of OG boxing gym.
Yeah.
Took one boxer sizing class. I was like, and after the class, I talked to the owner of the gym, Tony, and I was like, that was fun, but like, I want to fight. And, you know, I'm a tall girl, like I'm like 5'11", and I'm aggressive and I learn quickly. And he was like, absolutely, yes. You know,
like
the wingspan.
I see.
Yeah, like totally. And there's so few, at the time, there were so few female boxers. Like, I think there were two other female boxers in my gym. So, like, you know, I have this great wingspan that just gives me such an advantage when boxing. So, like, even though I wasn't the best technically sound boxer, like, I learned how to box and had my first fight after 6 months of training, you know, like, And I won one and I lost one, you know, and like I'm okay with that average, you know. So from there, I'll speed this up so you don't get too long winded of an answer. But from there, I had to quit boxing because it just took over my entire life. Like, I changed my whole diet. I was training every single day. I was running. I was not eating any carbs. Like, it was just like it took over my entire life. I was all in. Yeah. And then I shifted into doing a lot of yoga. I got really sick. There's like a whole sickness part of this too, where I like actually wasn't paying attention to my body, and I developed a giant cyst attached to one of my ovaries, and I had to have a surgery. It was like 15 centimeters big, which like is the equivalent of being 6 months pregnant. And I didn't realize that was in my body. And like, I think that, you know, if you reverse engineer and just like kind of look at it at a high level, my athletic career, up until very recently, I think has been largely unhealthy, you know, and just actually just used as a outlet to deal with anxiety and stress from life. And I wasn't listening to my body up until that happened, and it put me in the emergency room, and I thought I was going to literally die. I was in so much pain.
Wow.
So from there, I was like, okay, shift, going to do yoga, connect my body, listen to what she is saying. And then from there, I found dancing, and I was taking dance hall classes and all different types of classes for a long time at Underground Dance Center, which really changed my life.
Amazing.
Such a freeing environment, so supportive. And then from there, this year and this past year, I've been like starting to play around with tennis. I'm like very, very much flirting in my brain with the idea of cycling. Getting back into running a little bit, trying to do it gently and just like not let it take over my life. I think that's all the sports.
that's amazing. As you've transitioned into an adult and just like the perspective, I mean, Sid, you're dynamic. I think, like, that's the word that comes to mind. It's like, for your interest in what you do and just like how you go all in, it's amazing. It reminds me of that scene in The Matrix when, I don't know if you remember this or if anybody else will, but like Neo first sits in the chair and he's learning how to, learn karate or something, and you know they're uploading all these programs in, and he's like,
right.
I like it, like he like the sort of the tension and the mental sort of workout that comes with like learning new things. You can tell that you really love that aspect of like going all in and like just letting something take over. It's commendable and courageous in a lot of ways, which is interesting because you keyed in on something about two things that I don't think we often do. One, listening to our bodies, and two, how from a mental health standpoint and utilizing exercise, essentially active lifestyle through all these different mediums, how were these things reshaping your mental health? How were they reshaping your relationship with yourself? And then how did that transition into like yoga and listening more and dance? Sort of evolve that understanding of your mental health and your physical health.
That's really the parallels that have been drawn for me and built for me in adulthood, especially. So with running, I don't think at the time when I first started, I would have been able to articulate this, but like, It was really like I wanted to build a community in Toronto. I just moved there. I wanted to feel part of the city. I wanted to have a support network. You know, the relationship I have with my family is very tenuous. And so I'm very much about like the chosen family.
Yeah.
And I definitely found that in running. Like there's the founder, one of the co-founders of Parkdale Roadrunners, Stephen Artemieux, and he like is legit, like I have put him down as my brother on my medical form.
Amazing.
Like like he is like big brother to me for sure. And I think that running at first was about building community, active, yeah, but like not really again for the physical side, but really for like the mental side. Like it's just like I felt compelled. I got into a space, like I think that this happens like with running, especially, people are like, how do you run for 3 hours? And it's like, after you get over like the struggle of doing a 5K, then the rest of it up until 30K is just mental in my head. The rest of it is just mental. Like the 5K line sucks for sure. It sucks because like the first 20 to 30 minutes of running, you're just trying to balance out your breathing with your body bouncing around. It feels uncomfortable and gross and like you're heaving and nothing is in rhythm. It's just awful.
Yeah.
But then after you get over that and you like have a couple months of that under your belt, then everything's fine. It's just mental, you know? So I think once I got to a certain pace where it's so meditative, that's literally what I would do. Is like if I was feeling really stressed about school, about life, like I would skip class and I would go run a half marathon. Like I would just go and put headphones in and just go and just be gone, you know, for hours.
Just sit on a Tuesday running 13 miles because stressed out. That's beautiful.
Like I was reaching 100K weeks, like, and I don't think it was, I got stress fractures. Like it was not healthy, you know? I think it was like maybe commendable in the superficial way that we commend running now, especially, which is a big thing that I'm going to talk about on my podcast, but like it wasn't healthy, you know? So then I think with boxing, it was interesting because that was the first sport where as a woman, I learned two key things. One being I learned how to be scary, and women are not taught how to be scary. Yeah. Boys are taught how to play fight when they're really young and they're taught about being tough and manly and blah, blah, blah. Women are not ever taught that. And that even just mental and physical embodiment of being intimidating is so powerful.
Yes.
Like I remember the moment that clicked for me. I was in the ring sparring with another woman who was way better than me. Like she had way better technique. She was faster. She was smarter. She was better at defense. But like I was scarier, you know, like I intimidated her. She was backing into a corner. And realistically, if she had the same level of aggression and confidence that I had, she would have won. But she didn't. I did, because I was confident and I was aggressive and I was scary. So like, that's one thing that completely changed the way that I carry myself. And that translates into my personal life, into my professional life. Like, how I carry myself in a room and doing a presentation, doing public speaking, like, those things are all intricately connected. Yeah. And then the second thing that I learned, which I also think was super pivotal, is that boxing is the only sport where my determining my weight class, making a decision about my weight, was a strategic one. It wasn't attributed to my skill level, my performance. It wasn't an appraisal of my value as a woman, yeah, either, which is a huge thing. Picking a weight class, going up or going down, like, I was kind of in the middle of two, and I can't even remember what I picked now, because I don't even think it's necessary. I think I went down, but I honestly cannot even remember. But like, is that, having that be a strategic decision, not one that is connected to my value as a human being, was completely revolutionary for me. Because, wow, especially growing up doing gymnastics and trampoline, like, I can look at photos of myself then, and like, I was a similar height in high school, a similar height to what I am now, and I was like, oh my god, I was so skinny. I was just muscle and bone. Like, I looked like a grasshopper. Like, yeah, I was so skinny and tall, and like, I remember thinking, when I was that small, and like, when I was, you know, 15 or 14 or something, I'm like, god, I'm so fat. Meanwhile, I have a fucking six pack, you know, like, yeah, and I can do like 20 pull-ups, and I can pull myself up a rope without my legs, you know, yeah, like, I was so incredibly strong, yeah, but I was, yeah, just so insecure, you know, because women, especially in that type of environment, young women, it's like, you have to be tiny, short and skinny and everything to make it in gymnastics, and to just see yourself even belonging, you know, let alone, yeah, quotations, making it, right? Yeah. So that was really pivotal in boxing. And then transitioning into yoga after I had this like crazy ovarian cyst situation, which, by the way, is so common for women. It's so common, and no one fucking talks about it until you have it. And then everyone comes out of the woodwork being like, I had that too. And I'm like, why the fuck did no one tell me? This was terrifying.
It's scary, yeah.
But then after that happened, going into yoga, it was really just like a complete shift in how I listen to my body, and how working out just gives me like a greater sensitivity and connection to myself. Yep. And then at the same time, like, I was also reeling from, and this is why dance was so powerful, I was just reeling from, like, you know, healing from a realization about the fact that I was sexually assaulted when I was 18. And up until that point, I did not have the language to talk about it. I, yeah, thought it was just bad sex, but like, I was drunk and I could not defend myself. And that is what happened. Like, that was rape, you know?
Yeah.
And up until I was, you know, about 24, I didn't have the language to talk about that, because it wasn't discussed, you know, like, it's much more prevalent now to talk about it, but like, I didn't have anyone to talk. No one was talking about this. I didn't know how to talk about it. I didn't know how to make sense of this in my head. And so I think that repressing my experience with sexual assault, combined with just general anxiety about life, led to such an unhealthy physical activity, you know, pattern,
yeah,
of me just suppressing things in my body, you, yeah, know, suppressing anything really from like the fucking waist down. Like, yeah, the, yeah, fact that I had something that was the size, like, bigger than a grapefruit, you know, in my body, and I did not know it was there, and that did not cause alarm for me. Like, it's just really, it's, I feel like there's such a clear parallel there.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then once I did kind of accept, you know, that, okay, this happened to me, and then, you know, reading like the BuzzFeed articles, like, what is, I remember like I had like a little click moment being like, oh shit, that's what that is. And then I like Google searched, like, what is sex like for people who have been raped? And it was like a 50-point list, I think, on BuzzFeed or something. Uh-huh. It was just like individual people's reflections on like, oh, I have this type of trigger now and I can't do this type of thing. And I was like, oh fuck, like, I have all of that.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah, I have all those things. And I thought they were just weird tics, but really they're just like the consequences of being forced into doing something you don't want to do, and, yeah, having your agency stripped of you. Like, that just like the it refracts throughout your brain and your body, yep. you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And so from yoga into dance, like specifically with dance hall, there's an amazing teacher at Underground Dance Center called Jonah Abrams. And she taught a class on Sunday. It's called Wine and Grind. And it was like, there was a beginner class and then an intermediate class. And I went to that every Sunday for like 2 years. And that class was like, she created such a safe space for us to not only learn and understand like the culture and the technique of dance hall, of which there is a lot of technique, even though people, I think, dumb that down, like, or they perceive it to be not having technique. There's so much technique and so much richness behind that dance style. And in addition to that, like building a community of women who would go there every single week where you could express your sexuality without being sexualized. You know, because you yeah. can't dance like that
no.
in a club. You can't do fucking anything with a club in a club without any guy grabbing you, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah.
So having that space where I could see my own sexuality as part of me, not a performance for somebody else, that was such an intrinsic, like, it's such a key part of my own, I don't know, journey in yeah. becoming like a whole fucking human, you yeah, know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's
huge shift.
There's a lot to break down in everything that you just said. And, you know, a lot of what I'm hearing is like transitioning into boxing taught you your power and this like this form of self-acceptance and confidence. And then transitioning that into yoga and dancing brought a listening, a type of internal sort of inner ear, if you would, to like accept and heal, and then again through dance like express that power again and be in a safe space with that. And it's just like that journey piece. I mean, for anyone listening, please listen to Sid's podcast and everything else she has going on, because we unfortunately don't have enough time in this to like really do a deep dive into all those things. But it's a very powerful experience in terms of how you can use some of these aspects to heal. And then the unhealthiness, you're keying in on something else too, the unhealthiness of overworking out, you know, like how it's typically looked at, you know, you work out a bunch, like how it can be looked at as, you know, healthy and you're doing this thing that's supposedly good for you, but there is a boundary and there is a threshold there in terms of trying to balance what is healthy and unhealthy and what does recovery look like and so on and so forth. But I mean, man, amazingly powerful like journey that you've been on. And it's no wonder that you are now here with so much to share with the world in terms of your learnings. And I imagine that's kind of what Toenails is, right? So Toenails is your podcast, your other podcast, because you have two podcasts. So what is Toenails about, and how are you kind of shaping, it sounds like, a lot of this life experience, especially with sport and being active, into a running podcast that's more than a running podcast?
For sure. Let me do one thing first. Can I push my meeting to 2 so you can have a little bit more time?
Yeah, I love it. Okay. I love it. This is happening live, okay. People. This is, when you listen to this.
This is me ignoring my job so that I can do this.
We're pushing meetings, important conversations.
There we go. Okay, I just moved it. It's fine. It's fine. I keep doing it. Okay, so the Toenails podcast came about. So I, when I was in fashion school, there was a project maybe in second or third year, I can't remember now, maybe third year, to make a mock editorial for a brand. Yeah. And, you know, being in fashion school, especially in like 2012 to 2016, the program was almost exclusively women, right? Like with the girls and the gays, right? And it was like not really the vibe that I was going for. Like I realized very quickly after, you know, an internship at Elle magazine, which is a Canadian fashion magazine, and then at The Coverture, which I don't know even, I think it still exists, is a fashion website. I was like, oh, I hate fashion. I was like, oh, I hate women's wear. This fucking sucks. Like, this is boring and elitist and like, it's lame. And So I did my mock editorial where my peers were doing like Prada and Gucci and blah, blah, blah. I was like, okay, one, I can't afford to buy these clothes and then return them. Like, I don't have the money for that.
Yeah.
And then two, like, I'm just wholly uninterested. So I did a mock editorial for this brand, CL Athletic Rec, which at the time had just launched. And I was deep into running at this time still. And a bunch of my friends who were like, you know, hot, cool runners, you know, from Toronto, like, we're all wearing these hats. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to do it for this hat brand. Like, yeah. And I made a mock editorial and I posted it on Instagram back when Instagram was actually fun. And CL, Jeremy from CL, who's one of the co-founders, reached out to me and was like, wow, this is really cool. And it just started a relationship where I am fairly certain that this mock editorial I did for school was actually the first editorial they ever had as a brand. Wow. So they put it on their website and it like began this relationship with them that started when I was a baby and in university had never shot for a real client before. It's me shooting many editorials for them and many stories and traveling with a bunch of different people to shoot content for them. And so, you know, Jeremy and I from CL have a really good relationship and we've just stayed in contact. Even though I haven't really been working with the brand as much in the past couple of years. And there was a time maybe 2 years ago when I pitched a podcast to them and they didn't have like the budget for it at the time. But then earlier this year, I had another conversation with them and it worked out. So I made the podcast with them, but it's something, the subject matter of it is something that I've always been thinking about because I've been involved in sports my whole life as my, you know, my long-winded answer to, I think, your first question, you know, explains. It's like, I've been involved in sports my whole life, but I know that I'm not the winner, you know, like I'm not the number one athlete. I'm not the MVP. That's not why I play sports. That's not why I'm active. You know, like I don't really care about looking hot or gear or winning or like any of this kind of shit. And I just felt, and I still do feel like there is very little representation of narratives in sport media that reflect an alternative outlook on people playing sports. Like, why the fuck do we have to be concerned with, you know, no shade, but like champions, you know, why do we have to care about that? Like, take the Boston Marathon, for example, right? Like 99.996% of people who run that race are losers, you know, by the text definition of like winning and losing. It's a fucking race. There's one winner. Everyone else is a loser, right? Yeah, yeah. So you have to find another reason to run. And all those people have other reasons to run, you know? They have deeply personal or spiritual or, you know, a myriad of other reasons to get involved. And cultural, social, like, et cetera, political reasons. Like, there's lots of reasons to participate in sports. And there's lots of ways to get involved. And I just, like, still feel like there is such a lack of nuance in sport media and running in particular. Like, yeah, running has become more popular, but like, it's still so boring. And the way that it's discussed, it's so boring.
It is. Like,
can we fucking cool it with the Nike love? Like, let's move on.
You know?
Like, not, it's just like, it's very
generic.
It's just, vanilla. I don't know. It's just, it's lame and it's exclusionary, and it's not very innovative, and I don't feel like it's pushing culture forward. And so I wanted to make a podcast that talked about running in the way that I think about running. I wanted to immerse running into the real world. You know, I think I am really going to challenge this idea that, oh, all you need are shoes, you know, like that's not true. You know, there are barriers to running, just like there are barriers to everything in life. And I want to have a more nuanced conversation about the kind of opening tagline that I put in the trailer. There's what else can running do? You know, like, I don't care about fueling regimes and winning races. I don't care about gear. Fucking, it's amazing sneakers and it's sneaker designers and Olympic athletes. Like, that is all cool and good, whatever. But I don't care about any of that. Like, we're not going to talk about any of that on the podcast.
which is dope because I think running needs that perspective right now. I mean, and no shade taken in terms of champion, because really the whole reason I started League of Champs was the B definition of champion, which means more so to champion a purpose or fight for a purpose or to have a purpose. So for me, you know, everyday quote unquote athlete, not the top finisher, maybe not always a PR, but sort of redefining what victory really means and like victory comes from within, right? And a lot of, I think what you're talking about, you know, reflects in what we're trying to accomplish with the brand here, because it's like, yeah, I mean, you most people that enter a marathon are not getting in it to win it. they're getting in it to finish it. They're getting in it to accomplish something. They're running with a larger sense of awareness and purpose. And yeah, I mean, it's really dope in many ways that you're going to key in on a lot of things that are not talked about in the context of running. It's like, you do need more than just shoes.
you know,
you need clothes and you need a safe space to run. And, you know, you need maybe once you get a bit more serious, a running watch and so on and so forth, like the gear, right? The gear is a thing. And yeah, so I'm massively interested to hear your perspective, because I definitely come from, you know, I can nerd out on the gear and the tech and, you know, even the sense of PRs and running fast. And it's just, running's just not in its purity. And that's why I love talking to like Rio Lakeshore or, you know, the guys from We Run 3-on-3 based out of Detroit. You know, because those people, both in Rio and We Run 3-on-3, and it sounds like from yourself too, it's about the community. It's about the freedom that comes from running. It's about the outlet that comes from running. It's like, it's not about the time or what shoes you have on. It's like purely like you have 37 minutes to like free your mind, you know, for a few miles. And that is the true power. So that's amazing. I'm fascinated to listen, because I know even in this conversation, I can tell that we will get the cultural aspects of your dynamic life folded in into that podcast. So when does it officially launch? When is it up? When is it out? When can we listen?
Yeah, so the trailer's out right now. It's on everywhere that you listen to podcasts. It's Toenails. That's the name of the podcast, intentionally gross name. The trailer is out. The trailer is about 4 minutes long. It's a little bit of a teaser of what is going to come. And then the first episode will come out at the end of September. And then that'll be updated on all the various places that people get their podcast.
Yeah, we'll be sure to put all of that in the notes so that people can check out the trailer, check out your Instagram, check out everything else you have going on. So I guess to round all this up, being in New York over the past, you know, 6-7 months and now being back in Canada, like what is working out looking like for you right now? I mean, let's not even call it working out. Let's just call it like, what is your activity like right now? Like what are you going to like sort of, as your outlet, from an athletic standpoint?
Yeah. I mean, now that I'm kind of on the move a little bit, I'm going to be in Montreal for a couple of weeks and then go to Toronto for a month and then maybe go elsewhere. But I have, you know, some resistance bands and a skipping rope. And I've just been doing the past few days in Montreal, I've been doing a few NTC workouts. There's like a little patio roof situation in the apartment building I'm staying in. Nice. So I've been using that. And just like meditating a little bit, and like, I got a little bit of a knee injury hiking a couple weeks ago, so I've been doing some mobility stuff, but nothing crazy, just kind of like a maintenance sort of view, and knowing that, you know, I have 14 days of like a strict quarantine. Like, yeah. I had a friend deliver me groceries yesterday. Like, I am not leaving this apartment.
We're still living
this
life. And so
I think I still need to, I just need to work out regularly, mainly so I have a little bit of fucking variety in my day and like half the time and get like, feel a different kind of energetic state. But just to maintain my mental health, I think 14 days in quarantine, though it doesn't sound that bad, it can be a little grueling to not have any face-to-face social interaction.
For
but
sure.
Yeah, I got the resistance band. Maybe once I can go outside again, I'll run around a little bit, just try to keep it chill. Like,
Yep.
I don't think working out is going to be a priority in my life over the next few months, but it's just it's a constant.
Exactly.
So I'm just going to kind of keep the maintenance going so that everything else runs smoothly.
Yeah. And the last question I have for you is I'm massively curious about sort of mental health balanced against working out, if you would. And do you feel the need to as you said, you'll be on the move and it's not going to be a huge priority, but is it like almost something some days that you feel like you just have to do, like you don't have a choice, whether that's, and I'm not saying like running or even like lifting anything or using resistance bands. It might be yoga. It might be dancing around the house to Jazz and Sullivan. Like what do you feel that need to move on a consistent basis to help sort of everything else that's going on?
Yeah, for sure. Like I just know that it's part of the infrastructure I need for my life.
Yeah.
I just know that it's like, it's as non-negotiable to me as eating and sleeping and drinking like a fuck ton of water. Like it's just,
yeah.
It's a necessary piece of the infrastructure that kind of keeps me afloat. So I don't feel like always stoked to go work out. But I just know like at a larger scale, like this is a necessary step in like me being healthy. So it has to happen.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to happen every single day and it doesn't have to be particularly intense. You know, like these NCC workouts are like good, but they're not crazy. You know,
yeah.
Like
yep.
It's hard to get the same level of intensity of like an in-person HIIT class or like any type of game or whatever. When you're doing it by yourself in an apartment, like looking at a phone, you know, it's kind of hard to match that, but like,
yeah.
It's just, again, it's like maintenance is part of the infrastructure of my life that
yeah.
is pretty non-negotiable. Like it just has to be there. Otherwise
yeah.
I know that if I let that slip, then my mental health is going to start to slip as well. And like, can't have that, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing how both of those work in unison. My mom always said your DNA loads the gun, but you pull the trigger, meaning that your sort of your actions and what you eat and how you live your life sort of, you know, reflect sort of how your life gets expressed, if you would. And I think you're keying in on something
for
about
sure.
staying moving and, you know, making sure that you have those healthy outlets, because otherwise
yeah.
It can be a slippery slope. Yeah.
And to just add like another thing, I think like maybe it's changing a little bit now, but it's really only like, I think like a very individualistic wellness culture that has assumed a larger place in our cultural conversation. But
totally.
Like, I think that there's a huge problem in the way that sports and physical activity is talked about when you're a kid that really sets a unequal foundation and like a really skewed perception of what it means to be active. Like the idea of like the stereotype of a jock, like you either are a jock or you're not a jock, is
yeah.
like, I actually think like maybe it sounds benign, but I actually think that that's so harmful because it really sets it out from the beginning that often, you know, jocks are like skinny and white and rich
yeah.
and like that just limits so many people from getting involved in physical activity when it should be accessible to everybody. And I don't care if you want to play sport or you don't play sport. Like
yeah.
just being active should be seen as par for the course for everybody because
totally.
It's a good thing to do, you know,
yeah.
for yourself and for your like larger impact on the world. But like that to me is like, it just sets a narrative that you have to be good at this to do it,
yeah,
you know? And
yeah.
like, I think that it's just so prevalent today, like the need to be good at things. Like,
yeah.
I'm going to talk about this in a future episode of the podcast, but like just the idea that you can't just like do something because you enjoy it, you
yeah.
know, like whatever
yeah.
happened to hobbies, you know, everything has to be optimized for your personal brand now.
Yeah.
And like, you can't just be okay at something. Like,
yeah.
why do we have to be striving to be fucking better all the time?
Yeah.
Like, I don't care about being faster. I
yeah.
don't care.
Yeah.
Cool if that happens, but like, why the fuck would I care about that? Like
yeah.
It just feels so capitalist to be like bigger, better, faster, stronger, like let's optimize everything. Like,
yeah,
you know, I'm not working out so that I can be more productive at work. Yes, that will naturally happen. Like being in touch with your body and moving your body is like a right that you have, you know, it's not limited to like a certain social strata or like certain position in the world, or like it's not something to be used to make you like a better capitalist fucking cog, you know? Like it just makes me really clearly passionate and annoyed that a lot of people, like a lot of my peers, just see working out and see being active as not something that is congruous with the life that they live. Yeah. You know, I just think that's so detrimental and so, honestly, that's killing us. Totally. You know, that's killing us. Like, Joe Holder, who I really love, is a trainer, and he has this kind of whole ethos about being active and taking control of your physical health is a step towards, you know, your reclaiming your own autonomy and reclaiming your life from a society that doesn't want you to be healthy. You know, like we're thinking specifically about women of color, about queer people, about trans people. Like society and the pressures of the world are killing us.
Yeah.
You know, like the being able and feeling like you are allowed to, and you are encouraged to, and you're part of like a physically active community and like part of sports and allowed to access those things, like that changes your experience of life and your fucking longevity in this world.
Both internally and externally.
It's just really like it's truly like violent how those stereotypes are like so heavily cemented into the fabric of our society that like you're either a jock, you're not a jock, you're either like a wellness fucking influencer or you're not. Like this should be available to everybody.
Totally. And there's some very important things in what you're saying there, and it's multifaceted. I think there's a key point about what it's like to take control of your health in ways by having active lifestyle, by moving, by, you know, eating right. And that there's so much because of that, and sort of the foundations of our society, there's so much comparison and judgment in terms of, you know, I have to be faster, I have to look stronger if I'm going to work out in this program or go to this HIIT class or, you know, do this program, that I want to see results and I want to have this progression. And everybody works out for different purposes, but I think, man, you're saying something that's really important in terms of do it because it feels good and not because there doesn't always have to be a goal or an objective attached to what you're doing. Like the byproduct of moving on a daily basis for 20 minutes will positively impact your life farther than maybe you can even think of sometimes, but it doesn't necessarily have to be about gains or PRs or getting faster. It can be purely about the enjoyment of everything and doing it because you know it's for the betterment of your longevity and your health. I think that what I see with a lot of people that are active, that they do have an outlet, and it tends to start to reshape your perspective internally about yourself and what you're capable of. And that tends to then, has the potential to reflect in how you engage with the world and how you engage with other people, because your perspective on yourself is a little bit healthier. But I mean, Sid, we could like dedicate a whole another hour to what you just said. And it's super, super important because you're right. I think because of the advent of Instagram and how we share our lives. And I'm at fault of it too. I am one of those people that I enjoy getting faster. Like I'm working towards a specific time goal right now. But I mean, I also love like my Saturday long runs are so sacred to me, you know, because it's just, I'm not racing against a clock. It's an hour and a half. Some days I listen to music, some days I don't. And it's just like, to your earlier point, it can be such a meditative process and bring such presence in your life. And I mean, depending on what you got going on, you work through a lot of shit when you're off for an hour and a half, 2 hours, 3 hours. The brain, the mind, the spirit just goes to a place. And that is, I think, the ultimate benefit without having to attach some sort of some sort of goal or some sort of a capitalistic objective to always be evolving and be better and be this, you know, maximize your potential. Yeah. I think all that stuff is naturally a byproduct, and we, oh man, yeah, without having to, I could go, we could really tap into this, and maybe this is like a good sign to have another conversation about that in general, because that is a problem across the board.
And like, you know, no shade to people who like metrics and goals, but like, if you like metrics and goals and that works for you as motivating, you know, a motivating anchor, then cool, stick with that. Like, you already cracked the code for yourself, but you know, to paint that as the only way, you know, that's the problem. It's like, it's just such a one-dimensional narrative that we have about sports right now, where like, you have to be logged into fucking Strava or Garmin or Nike Run Club or whatever, and you have to be tracking and measuring and achieving and progressing. That is totally fine if that is what you're all about. But to paint that as the only way to get involved, that's what's limiting, and that's what's boring.
Yeah.
You know, that's like actually what's just like lame.
Well, because at some point it does become detrimental. There is baked within it a lot of comparison and judgment and pain to try to like live up to these external definitions of what internal success is, right? And that's a whole other conversation on like really defining what you're for yourself, what health is, what, you know, security is, what success is, what, you know, what it means to truly your own definition of what it is that you want out of your life, and not using, to your earlier point as well, Nike's over-bastardized definition of what victory is. I think like, especially our generation or the younger generations, like Nike has been this key proponent, and no shade, because I love the brand, love hate relationship with them, but you know, they've sort of been this, you know, Jordan-esque view of what success is, and it's like that's just not real. It's not real for anyone outside of, you know, LeBron James or, you know, some professional athlete. But there is, I think when you start to distill some of that down, there is a power that you can find within yourself, just like you did when you found that aggression when you were boxing, or, you know, the healing of yoga, or what somebody feels when they finish, you know, that 10 mile, that half marathon. There just is naturally some chemicals running through you that you don't get anywhere else. And it's a very, it can be a very powerful proponent without attaching all this stuff that can get in the way of the ease and the wisdom and the peace that can come from such a simple activity. So, yo, Sid, this was dope. I feel like we could philosophize on all this stuff for like another good hour, but we'll save that for another time. I appreciate you and your voice and your presence coming on today and breaking all this down, because this is powerful. And to be honest, like for the, I think, 18 episodes that we're in thus far, we haven't had this perspective yet. And it's much needed in the dialogue and the expression of where sport is right now, and to not always be to it's interesting though, because you're an all-in person, like the way you dedicate your life to things, and I think about the boxing in particular, but it's beautiful to not have to need these traditional aspects of definitions of success, right? Like this balance to like go all in on something, but not need the feel like you won, you know?
Yeah. The way I rationalize that, and you've been trying to end this episode for like 15
minutes. No, that's so good. This is how this works.
But like, you know, like, hey, man, this is a good time to, and I'm like, one more thing. But the way I rationalize it in my head is like, I know that I'm like hard, like I'm a Capricorn, I'm like really into my job, I'm about it, you know, but like the way I trick my brain into not, you know, beating myself up if I don't achieve this like external definition of success, you know, and the way that I'm trying to unlearn that is like by starting so many new things. You know, like it's a little just like hack in my brain where like I do something for like a year and a half. I can rationalize being trash at something for a year and a half, you know, because I'm a beginner and that's fine. And like you're learning and you're really gentle with yourself and you're really sensitive to how your body is changing and how you're learning new skills. And like, there's like a lot of wonder and like novelty and like, it's great. It's like learning a new language, you know? And I think that's like, that is like the part that I have grasped onto is like, I have tricked my little, you know, capitalist trained brain to be okay with not achieving success because I am treating everything like I'm a beginner, you know, like I have really strong opinions about a lot of things, but I'm also just like, I don't have too big of an ego to just be like, I am not an amazing athlete, you know, in the sense that I'm hitting, you know, fucking records and being number one and whatever. I just really enjoy the process of learning and I enjoy being active and that's it. You know, like I am not the best, at anything.
And that in itself is a skill though, that ability to adapt and learn and unlearn and take on these new things and go all in on them. And you just said something else that is like fascinating and a good place to sort of book in this, but to begin again, right? You know, I think about the whole Buddhistic teaching of beginning again and the beginner's mind, right? There's a whole book about the beginner's mind and really being able to use that mindset or that way of thinking on a daily basis, because it's when we get too attached to these external things or, you know, these goals or these objectives or trying to get to this place, it really disrupts the presence of like enjoying where you're at or being where you are. And I think a lot of what you're saying is a reminder to just begin again and like have that beginner's mind, because you don't get so attached to the outcome and it brings a bit more presence and a bit more enjoyment to the activity and the process itself versus, I gotta beat my PR or I gotta do this thing in order to quote unquote win. And that is powerful. That is a lesson that I think we all need on a daily basis, especially right now with everything going on in the world. It's just to like take a deep breath and begin again. It's a new day, and how can we approach that and be present with what we're doing? So, yo, Sid, thank you. Thank you for this. This was massively fresh. I really enjoyed locking in and tapping in for this conversation, and thanks for coming on the league. And I can't wait to hear your podcast and everything you're going to discuss, because I think we're going to learn a lot from who you're going to talk to and what you're going to talk about. So looking forward to toenails.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we'll catch up soon, some way, somehow. I'm sure we might not see each other soon, but the world is a virtual place. So yeah, looking forward to it. Thank you.
Yep. Talk to you soon.
All right. Peace.